You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
To Rendezvous with a Writer.
We're Jim and Bobby Bell.
And this is where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. Our opening music was Hot Texas Swing, Hot Texas, that was written and created by the Hot Texas Swing Band. And we have two guests with us tonight.
We do.
We have two guests. Yeah. Who's joining us tonight?
Peggy Chambers. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello. And Renee.
Yes. So you want to tell us first a little something about Peggy?
Let's do that.
Okay.
Peggy Chambers lives in her hometown of Enid, Oklahoma, with her husband. She is an award-winning multi-genre author that loves fantasy, suspense, and children's books. There's always another story worming its way around in her brain trying to come out.
Always, right, Peggy?
Always.
There aren't enough hours in the day. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you.
And Peggy, I think you have a special friend that you brought along tonight. Would you please tell us about Renee Goodrich?
This is Renee Goodrich. Renee is from Oklahoma City as well. I'm from Oklahoma. And she has been writing professionally for 20 years with diversified expertise in fiction, nonfiction, comedy sketches, novelizations, and screenwriting. She is multi-genre author of 24 novels and several nonfiction titles. Her indie film Skid won the Dead Center Best Oklahoma Feature in 2015. And in 2016, her novel My Life as a Doormat was adapted into the Hallmark movie, Love's Complicated. She is co-director of WriterCon in Oklahoma City and is the head writer at Skit Guys Radio Studios. She is co-writer on their new feature film called Family Camp. I just happen to have a copy here, if you can see it, but it's called Family Camp. That's the newest movie that she has out. So help me welcome Renee Goodrich.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here.
Yeah. I have one question. I know, Peggy, you got a great question to get us started, but how did you two meet?
Oh, it's interesting. I will tell my version, then you can tell yours if you'd like. We are both members of the Oklahoma Writers Federation, and she was asked to speak, and I was asked to introduce her. They call it shepherding. I follow this person around all weekend and say, can I help you?
And she was my favorite person that week.
Oh, I tried. I remember we had a lot of mic problems one day, but we managed, so.
Yes.
That's how we got acquainted.
That's how you met.
Yes.
Yes. And Renee, your memory?
Well, I think very similarly. I remember the mic problems, and I remember loving to be shepherded. Wonderful feeling. And Peggy was top notch. So it was fun.
How fun. Well, I know, Peggy, you got a great question to get us off and running.
Well, I wanted to ask Renee, I've read several of your books and watched your movies, and you write a lot of romantic comedies. How is it that you got started with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of funny. I am not a romance reader at all, and I'm a comedy writer. Comedy is a hard sell in publishing, just straight up comedy. So I had to find the genre that would please the reader, but also please my funny bone. And I just ended up in sort of romantic comedy. I have written some straight up comedies as well. The Occupational Hazard series is a straight up comedy series, but I sort of had to earn the reader's trust on that. And I love to watch romantic comedy movies as well. I love rom-coms. So it just seemed like a natural fit for me and sort of my sense of humor.
Yeah. Well, I think it's difficult. I've tried to write some comedy. I've had some judges say, I don't know if you think you're being funny, but you're not. I said, okay, well, let me try again. But you also, a lot of your stories are faith-based.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm sorry, what was the question?
There really wasn't a question other than a lot of your stories are faith-based and that must say something about you.
Yeah, I started exploring publishing in general right after college, I did not actually realize there were two markets, and there are only two markets in publishing. There's the faith-based market and the general market. And the reason there are two, you can say there's two markets because there are actual brick and mortar stores for the faith-based market. And I had no idea. I don't know where I'd been, but I wasn't reading faith-based books. And I was reading Stephen King growing up while going to church. You know, I didn't know. So I thought, you know, I have, you know, this worldview and this faith that that I love. And so I wonder if I can merge these two things. It ended up being a right fit for me. And I felt, you know, really comfortable in the market. I was a little bit of a little different, you know, comedy wasn't really a thing. Most of what was happening in the faith-based market at the time I entered was a lot of like, Left Behind was big when I entered. Francine Rivers, a lot of those romance and the Prairie novels and those kinds of things. So me coming in with quirky comedy was, I had to work my way in with suspense. So I started with suspense, but eventually I found my fit and my readers, and it ended up being great. You know, I published 25 books in the faith-based market.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
Wow.
That's
really great. A lot of books.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can I ask a quick question? In going over this wonderful introduction, can you just tell us what Skit Guys Studios is?
Yes, you froze up a little bit, but I think your question was, who are the Skit Guys and what
there
is
Skit
Studios? Okay. Yeah, so the Skit Guys are Tommy Woodard and Eddie James, and they have been around for over 30 years, traveling and doing comedy sketches, and they're fantastic. If you ever get a chance to see them, they are amazing. They put on an amazing live show. You won't regret going to one of their shows. But they also make short films and have done so for many years, over 15 years now, I think. And so they have several arms to their studio and what they do. They do a lot of different things, mostly for churches. And so when I came to work for them, they were actually looking for a screenwriter because their next journey was into feature films. And that's what they wanted to do. That was the big dream. And so when I came on to work with them, I started working in their short films division, and then we began working on their first film. So, okay. But yeah, the Skit Guys, I tell you what, you can go to skitguys.com and watch any of their videos for free, and they're really fun. They have really great content for families, so check them out.
Okay, that's great. Okay. That's great. Okay, Peggy, back to you.
I have one quick question. I noticed on your website you call yourself a creative type. So how do you describe that? What's a creative type?
Well, I think that it's somebody who sort of looks through the world and at the world and around the world with curiosity and then tries to make art from it. So that would be my definition, just put on the spot with it. But, you know, I'm a person that doesn't like to be put in a corner with my creative abilities. However, I only have limited creative abilities. For instance, I don't do crafts at all. And so what's funny is people think, oh, you're a creative writer. You must also do these other things. I'm like, I do not. I do not do these other things. I can, you know, write you a novel, but I can't write you a poem. So, you know, I have my limits on what I'm able to do, but I appreciate all types of creativity. I tell you what, you know what I love right now? What I am digging are memes. Those are some of the most creative little pieces of artwork. And people think, you know, they're not worth anything. It takes a lot to put a meme together. So if you think that they're easy, you should try to put one together. But, you know, any type of creativity, I really enjoy and appreciate.
Great.
Do you want to talk a little bit about, Peggy, do we want to get into a little bit about family camp?
Sure. That is your latest full-length feature film. And it's a comedy. It is also faith-based. Is a family, obviously a family movie. So can you tell us a little bit about the process of having, of getting that started and getting it written? You're one of the co-writers.
That's right. Yeah. So we started this journey probably around 2016, starting to work on getting this feature film together for Skit Guys. And we put a great first script together and we all loved it and everybody loved it. Everybody at the studio loved it. Like everybody loved this script. And then, one afternoon it went through a budget analysis and it died in an afternoon. That was my first big lesson about writing for budget. And, it was very devastating actually. So we had to sort of start over, completely over, but we started with this idea of like, okay, how can we write to budget? And the first idea was that, well, we stay in one location. That was probably helpful. The other one was a road trip movie. So we were moving locations every, you know, all the way down the highway. And we learned that's very costly. So we put together this story about two polar opposite men who, one loves going to family camp with his family. The other one could not think of a place he would least rather go. And so they room together. They're thrown into a yurt to together with their families. And then, of course, they get lost on the mountain together and have to work together to get off the mountain. And so it's very fun, very buddy comedy-ish. Has, you know, wonderful touches of John Hughes-ish stuff in it. And I don't know, it's if you loved 80s movies, you'll love Family Camp, I think. And you'll get a chance to see, you know, Tommy and Eddie, the Skit Guys, who I think you'll just fall in love with as soon as you meet them. They're great fun on and off screen.
Were you involved at all in the audition part of putting the film together?
Not really. I did get to see some of the audition tapes and loved watching them. And, you know, I can kind of throw my opinion in here and there, but at the end of the day, that's the director's and producer's job. So, but I thought they did a wonderful job casting it.
They did. They did.
And Peggy, I think you liked that little critter. Tell us about
the little critter that starts in the beginning and he's all through the movie.
Yep. He's a little critter. You got to watch the movie to find out what kind of little critter he is and what kind of trouble he causes. But he's fun. You know, it was quite a big deal to put that kind of special effects into a movie of our budget. And I think it worked out great.
It was really cute. It really was.
I kept thinking, oh, merchandising opportunity there.
Yeah.
Well, everybody wants one for Christmas, you know?
Yeah. And I kept with the capital T, that's for sure.
He was. I kept expecting Bigfoot to show up. I just knew Bigfoot would have a cameo, but
Well, and everybody will have to see the film to understand why Peggy expected Bigfoot, because if you haven't seen that film, Peggy expecting Bigfoot makes no sense. Yeah. But when you see the movie, you will understand why Peggy was expecting Bigfoot.
Yes.
And at one point, I mean, this is fun little behind the scenes facts. Bigfoot was in the script. So we had him in there, and as you can see, there's an empty hole where Bigfoot should have been, and Peggy picked it right up on that, being a storyteller herself. She said, there's a story hole here, and it's Bigfoot.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's funny. Were there, scenes that were, cut, you know, that were cut out, and were they cut because of budget or time, or they just weren't of the quality, they just didn't work out the way you hoped they would?
Well, all of the above, of course, as the writer, I don't even get to see, you know, I get to see basically the almost in product. But also as the writer, I know every word of that script. And I know when one word is gone, I'm like, where'd that word go? but understanding, of course, that all that stuff has to happen. And at the end, watching the final version, I didn't miss any of it. It was all, they made the right call on everything, I think.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought the acting was great. Certainly the writing was great. It was just a lot of fun, the whole thing. And there was a lesson to be learned at the end. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Well, those are important things to the Skit Guys as an organization and for Tommy and Eddie. So they work very hard at that. And I think they always have a great positive message wherever they go. So.
Mm-hmm. So is there I'm sorry, go ahead, Peg.
No, I was just going to say, were the actors from Oklahoma? You filmed this in Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm. So many of them are, and many of them were out of state. So it was great to be able to use some Oklahoma talent and film in Oklahoma, which was nice. And so we filmed in Guthrie, and we used a great amount of Oklahoma crew as well. So it was a really wonderful Oklahoma made movie, I think.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like we watched to the end of the credits, and then there was even some little scenes at the end of the credits. You're always rewarded. I like it when you're rewarded when you sit in the movie theater and you scroll down. I'm always hoping I'm going to recognize the name. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I do. And it was fun because, there's her name. But there seemed to me there were a lot of people involved, and there was even a prayer team.
Oh yes. Yeah. We had a whole prayer team, which I think makes a difference. And especially, you know, in the world that we're living in with pandemics and all sorts of things. So having people praying for us while we were filming and really throughout from the beginning to end, I think made a great difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the Oklahoma film industry is growing. There's no doubt. And I think you see that probably better than I do all the time.
Yeah. It's exciting right now. And I hope it continues to grow. And I hope, and I think the vision is for both big and small films to be made here. You know, you don't want to grow so big that you don't have room for independent films, being made. So hopefully we'll be balanced enough to have room for all sizes of film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's exciting to see so much production. We live in Albuquerque and New Mexico overall. And even in our area, we're seeing lots and lots of filming going on. I think Netflix and just all kinds. And I think we need the creative outlets. We need more production, you know, just like we need more fabulous books. We need more wonderful music. We need the artists to be providing family-friendly entertainment. And, you know, we need all of that to feed our souls, right?
I agree. We've got plenty of all sorts. So
we should too.
The whole gamut.
Yes.
Peggy, should we go ahead and take our first break? Or did you have something else we'd like to finish up about family camp?
I think go ahead. That would be great.
Okay. So we're going to take a very brief message break, and we are going to hear a little bit from our good friend Richard Polinelli and the publishing company Tuscany Bay Books. Don't leave.
Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli with Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a reader looking for the next best adventure for your summertime reading or, you know, coming up on the winter, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and check out our amazing bookshelf filled with books by some of the best authors out there in science fiction, fantasy, mystery thrillers, westerns, you name it. We've got something for you to read. And if you're an author who has just finished your manuscript and you're looking for a publisher, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Fill out our submission form. We'll take a look at it and we'll see if we can get you published and get you doing what you should be doing, which is writing your very next book. TuscanyBayBooks.com, that's your place to go if you're a reader or a writer. And now back to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with Peggy Chambers and her special guest, Renee Goodridge.
Hello.
Did you want to get talking about WriterCon?
Yes, that was my next question.
Perfect.
I know that you collaborate on a conference called WriterCon in Oklahoma City.
And, yes, I do.
Huh?
Yes, I do.
Yes, yep. And tell me a little bit about it. Where it is, what takes place, et cetera.
Well, it's really exciting, actually. Years ago, I started a conference with a group of friends called Write Well, Sell Well. And it was a great conference. It was a faith-based market conference. And we were going along great. And then there was another conference in Oklahoma. There are several conferences in Oklahoma, Peggy, as you know, but one of mm-hmm. them was Red Sneakers Writers Conference that was run by William Bernhardt. And one day Bill and I've known each other for a long time. We were having lunch one day and he said, "Hey, what if we combined our conferences and made one conference that represented both the general market and the faith-based market?" And I thought, I don't think there's anything like that. I don't think there's a conference that serves both markets. You know, you either go to faith-based market or you go to a general market conference. Right. And I thought it was a brilliant idea. Oklahoma City's a great place to have a conference because the center of the country, people can get here pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so we decided to join forces and do it. And we came up with WriterCon and it's been really, really great. And, you know, we're very dedicated to training the next generation of writer. You know, I got started in my writing career by going to writers' conferences, and I really advocate for them. I sold my first book at a writers' conference. I got my agent at a writers' conference. So they're very beneficial to writers. In fact, people will ask me, should I go get my master's in creative writing? I'm like, no, you should save your money and go to a writers' conference because you will learn more at a writers' conference than getting, you know, a master's degree in creative writing. Although if you want to, that's fine. It's not going to hurt you, but I'm just saying if you want to get published, a writer's conference is a great way to go.
It is. Mm-hmm. I also met my publishers at a writer's conference. Where can people find out about WriterCon and when will it be?
Yes. So it's we're at writercon.com. And so I hope you got that, con.com. And yes. We're always over Labor Day. And we always have the best mm-hmm. hotels. You know, the hotels are so important. Mm-hmm. So we are at the Waterford Hotel next year. And we've got some great speakers. Mm-hmm. We have Lisa Gardner. We have Tosca Lee. We have Susan Meisner. So, those are just our keynotes. And then we have a ton of other great writers and speakers. So mm-hmm. I hope you'll join us.
Well, I have been involved with it. I've never gone to it, but I have sat in on it virtually. Yeah. So they normally have a virtual conference as well. Mm-hmm. I suppose you'll have that again this year.
Yes. We usually have a streaming option of some sort. Yeah. Which came mm-hmm. about from COVID. We didn't always have that. That was sort of a survival thing that we did, but it's worked out good.
But it's great because you can sit in your living room and watch it and go back and watch it again.
And watch it again. What would be some good things if you were a writer coming for a first time or even a, you know, a second time, what would be some things you might do to prepare yourself so that you take full advantage of what maybe is offered. Sometimes conferences can be overwhelming, especially if it's like a first time.
Absolutely.
Some tips for how to make the best of it?
Yes, we have a lot of tips, and we actually have almost always some sort of beginner's class people can take to help them prepare as well. Yeah. But, you know, one of the things is you want to study the speakers and you want to come up with a plan before you get there, because if you get there and don't have a plan, it all seems super overwhelming. So you can get online early, look at the speakers, you know, look at the agents coming and try to figure out, okay, which agent might be a good fit for me to pitch to, which publisher might be a good fit. However, if you're brand new, you don't have a manuscript, you're just now coming into the writing game, don't feel like you need to pitch. You know, that's, now is your time for learning and going to as many classes, meeting other writers, and, you know, doing that sort of thing. It can be overwhelming, but I always tell people, look, always have fun with writing from beginning to end. The moment you lose the fun, then you lose the magic. So make sure that, you know, I've been to writers' conferences, and I was one young person at one point that would, you know, walk away from a bad pitch and just be in hysterics, you know, in my room, and just thinking the world was over and I was never going to publish and all of that. And so, you know, I've tried over the years to get a better perspective. And if you can get that perspective earlier than later, you'll have a lot more fun in the journey.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that has to do with even reading reviews and things.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is always, it's a topic we don't always have time to chat about, but y'all do have to kind of develop a, anyone in the creative thick world, skin. A kind of a thick skin, don't you?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Peggy knows, like, I got some great advice many years ago, and it really has served me well. My mentor, James Scott Bell, told me one time, he said, throw out the worst review and throw out the best review. And remember, you're somewhere in the middle. So you're not the greatest novel, you know, that's ever been written, but you're not the worst writer that's ever lived. And somewhere in between, you are, you know, the writer. You know, you always go in going, well, I'm never going to read a review. Well, that's baloney. Of course, you're going to read your reviews. But if you can get the perspective going in, a healthy perspective, then I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, Peggy, how do you handle reading reviews?
I have one really bad one on one of my books. And every now and then I go back and read it just simply because the guy's name was Grumpy Guy. Now, this tells you something to begin with. He's not going to give you a good review. Come on. He gave me like one star and his name was Grumpy Guy. And I won't tell you what he said, but it does make you have to laugh. You don't have a choice but to just laugh. And we were talking about pitching a little bit ago.
Yes.
My very first time that I pitched, I went to a conference and I was shaking in my boots and I went in and I sat down and I write fiction. So when I sat down and started telling this man all about my great idea, he said, you know, I'm a nonfiction agent. Right?
Oh.
Yeah.
No, they set me with the wrong person. So that was just a bust. I just said, well, I'm sorry to take up your time. And I left.
Yeah. Well, and you learned, you learned something from that. And you just shared it with anybody listening. Yeah. I think in this day and age, you know, when I was a kid, you did a book report for school and you read books over the years and you did reports on them. But now we're really called to, you know, leave a review. Read this book. You bought it from this site or that site or whatever, you know, leave a review. I find that really intimidating, even though that I've been talking to an author a week for the last 7 years. I still don't quite know, even though I've been delighted by every book I've read. Can you just, both of you, maybe from the author's standpoint, why should we? How do we help you when we do leave a comment, and what should we think about when we leave that comment?
Oh, well, I've never gotten that question before. I love it. Okay. Well, since you asked, I think for me, the reviews that are most helpful are more impersonal. So they're not attacking, right? But they're right. More like, here's what I really loved. Here's what I think the author did really well. And then here's something that didn't quite work for me. If there's anything, you don't have to go digging for it. But if there was mm-hmm. something that you noticed, you can point that out. That's what Publishers Weekly does really well. Mm-hmm. You know, their critiques are always well regarded because they do, you know, very much that sort of review. And that's really helpful. I've read all of my Publisher Weekly reviews and they've always helped me get better.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add, Peggy, to that?
No, I just think that it, like Renee said, if your mother writes one for you or your sister or something, of course, they're going to hopefully give you great reviews. But it does help to learn something from it. When the lady says she's great, I can't wait for her next book, that doesn't really tell you anything mm-hmm. as a person looking to read a book. So I think if they just say she's creative in all of her descriptions of and her characterizations and the, the story flow, that helps a little bit. Mm-hmm. She can't spell. She doesn't know anything about story structure. That hurts, but, you know.
Grumpy guy. Grumpy gal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's see. What time are we at? I'm the timekeeper, and I'm so engaged in what we're doing. Oh, I think we might take another quick break here. And when we come back, shall we talk about one of the two books, the first of the two books that we were reading, maybe?
You bet.
When we come back? Okay. Let's so stay that. Tuned. We'll be back for more after this word from Out West Shop.
Okay.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with Peggy Chambers and Renee Goodridge. You know, we got in a little commercial we just heard. You know, there's a coupon available. It's radio.
Yeah, radio.
What do you thought?
R-A-D-I-O, radio.
Capital letters. Uh-huh. 10% off on your order. So just going to want to shoot that in there.
Yep, outwestshop.com.
Enough of that now. Let's get on to
the
stuff.
Yeah, let's get on to the next part.
Okay.
Can we see this?
You can kind of, the light, yeah, we can see it.
So, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
My Life as a Doormat was originally your novel. Am I right?
Yes.
And that's you right. talked to the Hallmark Movie Channel and they loved it. So
well, I would love that was the story, Peggy.
That's not it.
I just said, hey, I've got this great novel. And they're like, it's fantastic. Just for the title, we're taking it. No, it was a lengthy process. And, mm-hmm. I think we all hope that we could sell our books as movies. And I have to tell you, I have no idea how it all went down. I didn't own the film rights. The publisher owned the film rights. And so we got word that Hallmark was interested in the book. I would love to know how they came about. Who read the book that called somebody at Hallmark? Or, you know, I just want the backstory of my... And so anyway, they... we said, okay, my agent, of course, worked it out. And then it went around and around. I mean, I think it was 3 years or more signing, the option, re-signing the option, re-signing the option. And knowing how the film world works, I knew they were probably trying to raise money, get funding, because there are production companies that make films for Hallmark. And, they work with Hallmark. And so... I'm at my desk one day, working on one of my books, and I get a message on Twitter that says, hey, is one of your books being made? into a Hallmark movie
on Twitter.
And I was like, how would they know that? And then she sends me a screenshot. It had gone into production.
Oh my God.
They're the lady that's supposed to be the liaison for between the publisher and the Hallmark was on maternity leave. So we never got the memo that it had actually gone into production. So like, I'm on Twitter watching. Oh my God, the cast. Oh my gosh. You know, I'm like fangirling along with everybody else. And anyway, it was really, really fun. And then I had a little watch party with some friends and got to see. I thought they did a great job. You know, there's a lot of B stories or subplots in the book that didn't make it into the movie. But yeah, I thought they did a great job.
But they changed the title.
Oh, yes, now that was painful. And that was a last minute decision. I mean, it was like, I want to say like maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the movie came out and we got the word that they were changing it because they felt like my life as a doormat was a little too negative for Hallmark and that Love's Complicated, you know, fit Hallmark better, which I have to agree probably is true. Love's Complicated sounds way more Hallmarky than something with the word doormat in it.
That would be true. I agree with you.
Yeah, but you know, and to this day, I still get people tell me that they'll tell me that it's one of the most unique Hallmark movies they've seen, that it's different than some of what they see on Hallmark, which I love. You know, I love to be, I love being the quirky Hallmark movie. I mean, why not be the quirky one? So I'm proud of it. And I'm glad. I think they did a great job, everybody involved. So
that's great.
Can I ask a question? Let's go back a little bit. This book goes back to about 2002, 2003 when you first wrote it.
That sounds right. Yeah somewhere in
a while
there.
Back. What was your inspiration to write this book?
Well, a lot of that's back when I wrote it and it came out and I was doing, you know, the press junkets and stuff and people were like, that was always on the question list, you know, are you a doormat?
Is this about
you? And you know, I was like, well, I said I am doormat-esque.
And oh, no.
I have doormat tendencies in certain circles and situations. I think we probably all have a little bit of that in us.
I think so.
I, of course, created an extreme character. But what's funny with all of my books, I think people think I'm writing about me and every character. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there's a part of me in every character, but, you know, I can't be a cute little rom-com female lead and also a serial killer. Like, I write all the genres. So, I mean, either I am one crazy lady or I might be making people up. But, yeah.
Multiple personality disorder. Is that what you have?
Uh-huh, oh, no. That's it. I can't stand up for myself, but I kill multiple people also. And so, yeah, it's funny. I mean, I think that the that one, this book probably gave me that question the most is, well, is it based on you? So I would say I have grown a lot more, of course, in myself and learned a lot from this character. I learned kind of what my doormat issues are. And it was fun. It was a fun book. It was a fun character. So.
That's great. I thought your characters were interesting. You have Edward, you know, really a nice guy, but man, so boring.
Tell us what you really think.
and Leah's sister Kate, which was probably a juvenile delinquent at 8. You know.
Oh, is she the one that finally wore a blouse she couldn't see through?
Yeah.
He liked reading things aloud to me, Renee. I got to read this book through and excited narrator who would say, you got to hear this.
Oh, that blesses my heart when somebody runs into a spouse or like says, hey, I got to read this part of this book to you. It's completely out of context. You have no idea what's going on, but there's a funny line that they like or a funny character. That blesses my heart.
Well, and it also proves to any of our listeners or watchers out there that might be male that these books are not female only.
I would agree with that. I mean, Jim, like he said, I mean, there's boring Edward, but he didn't get to Cinco, who's not boring, who is a shock jock and brings all the excitement and the trouble.
He makes up for Edward.
Yeah. He makes up for Edward.
Oh, how funny. Okay, so Peggy, should we just quickly talk about, I'm just looking at, oh my gosh, we're at 40 minutes. Where's my, and so now I've been reading Never the Bride.
I think that's it.
Yeah, Peggy, do you have a question for her about Never the Bride?
I love this, and I read the book, and I just think it's interesting that you told me you did not know Cheryl McKay, who had written the film script. So tell us your story about that.
Yes. So, well, by the time I worked on this, I did know her. But the first time I adapted one of her scripts from a movie into a novel, that was The Ultimate Gift. And I worked with the producers on that and didn't know Cheryl, but I was reading her script and adapting her work into a novel. And I was reading the script and I thought, this writer is fabulous. Like, I just wanted to do justice to what the story that she had told. So finally, after the project was done, I decided to reach out to her. And, you know, it's always hard to cold call somebody or reach out to somebody you don't know. But it's like, hey, you don't know me. I just adapted your script into a novel. But we became fast friends and love her to death. And she said, you know, I've got this script and I would love for you to read it and tell me if you think this could be a novel. And I read Never the Bride and I just thought, this is absolutely a novel. Like, this is so funny. I loved it. And so we got to work on it and I took the script and I, you know, there's a lot that goes into taking a movie script and adapting it into a novel. You know, you don't really just go, here's a scene and here's a scene and here's a scene and here's a scene. There's work to take something that's only visual and make it into something that works in fiction, where there's an inner voice and, you know, a point of view and those types of things. So there, you know, you're really adding to the story. You can't take a 90-page script and make it into a 90,000-word novel with just the scenes that are in the script. So you have to do a lot of work in thinking through, you know, what happens off screen that I can put in the novel. But it was an absolute blast. Cheryl is a doll to work with. She's super generous as an author and a writer. You know, I would have an idea of something to add to her story. And, you know, I would call her and say, hey, what do you think about this? And she was always on board and really excited about it. So we made a great team and we did a couple of more together and still to this day are great friends. So I'm hopeful Never the Bride will still be made into a movie. She's actively is pitching this project and working towards getting it made. So hopefully someday.
Well, that's quite a compliment for someone to call you and say, by the way, I took your script and made it into a novel. Would you like to see that? And well, it is a great story. It is.
Since we're talking about books and the two that we just shared, as well as many of Peggy's titles, they're all available through our Out West Shop affiliate page to bookshop.org. We're going to show you a little ad about that right now.
Okay.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer, explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story. And we're back to Rendezvous with a Writer with our guests, Peggy and Renee. Peggy, I know you probably have a question or two about her creative process, and we maybe could cover that very briefly.
I noticed that on your website that you have, you offer services to writers. Can you tell us about that?
I do. I'm a champion for writers. I had great mentors, and I love working with writers. I do offer, some coaching, and I also really love working with writers in atmospheres like writers' conferences and things like that. So, I think the tab is called coaching, but you can see some packages there. But I also love speaking at libraries. I love speaking to writers groups. I mean, anytime somebody says, hey, could you speak about writing somewhere? I almost always can, because I love teaching about writing. I love teaching what I've learned over the years. I still love learning. You know, I'm always, as a writer, you never stop learning. That's the great thing about this craft, is you always have a chance to get better and better and refine your technique. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about being a writer that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. And we have one particular question. Am I right?
Yes.
And that is, do you have writer's block, and what do you do about it?
So I have always really resisted the term writer's block, because I think as soon as you say block, you've almost already created that problem for yourself. So I always call it a writer's pause. And I've always talked myself into this idea that when my brain stops the story for some reason, that there's a reason for that. And it's my job to see why the pause is there, whether I need to approach the story differently, whether I need to take a mental break, whether there's some story hole that I need to fill, whatever it is. I feel like that my brain automatically puts that pause in for me, for my benefit. So I think of it as something beneficial rather than something negative. I've actually seen writers who have completely walked away from the craft because they believe so much in writer's block. And I think it can be real detrimental. You know, writers are real fragile up here and in here, and we have to really keep ourselves psychologically strengthened and emotionally strengthened. And so we've got to be careful with terminology, I think, or we can possibly derail ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can.
Peggy, where can our listeners find out about you and your books?
Okay, my website is peggylchambers.com, and my books are available on Amazon and they're available in Barnes & Noble also. They're available in Kindle or print. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Renee can tell us where hers are available.
Yes,
I sure can. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBook.com, a lot of the different online retailers. And and most of them are audiobooks as well. So, and a lot of them are older. Because I'm older now. So some of them, the print versions are a little hard to find, but they're all on ebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we want to thank you both so much for joining us tonight on Rendezvous with a Writer. Mm. We want to thank all of you that have tuned in, either live tonight or going to catch this podcast. We want to thank Sam. We want to thank the Hot Texas Swing Band and Tuscany Bay Books. And next week, we'll be speaking with a good friend of ours, author Junie Fisher, and her book, Indelible Link. And we think that we may have a mutual friend, Jincy Brown, with us as well. And Jim, you you have a quote that you wanted to share from My Life as a Doormat.
This is very cool. This is kind of interesting. You know, it's kind of funny. These little things just kind of shot out in the book, you know, so you wouldn't be expecting them. And this is Aaliyah's thinking, you know, she just met this young fellow, you know, at a party, and she said, if he had any more charm, he would be a bracelet. Oh. Remember that one?
I like that.
So that made us chuckle. And so we have a challenge to our writers out there. Write us a sentence and post it on our Rendezvous with a Writer Out West Facebook page.
Great idea.
Because we love to chuckle.
All right.
And until we meet again next week, what is it? It's always a great day.
Out West.
Out West.
Oh, that one.
Oh, that one.
See you next week.
Goodbye.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.